Welcome to part two of the Ottawa Senators Ask Me Anything. I'm Cardinal, and along with Canuck and Pan, we're the Sens call-ups. We're joined again with Chief Marketing Officer Amy Daziel and Director of Digital Marketing Janice Nicholson. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Today we'll be covering the topics of digital presence, communication, and customer service, retention, growth, and acquisition.
Janice, before we get going, you weren't here on our meeting last week. Can you tell us a little bit about your work experience and what your role is with the team?
Sure. So I'm originally from Alberta, and the first time I moved to Ottawa was to get a start in politics, and I did that for many years until Canadians asked us to leave back in 1996, at which point I moved to Toronto and spent about 10 years working for the Hospital for Sick Children in a marketing and digital role, as well as working for the Research Institute. My family moved back to Ottawa recently, and timing was perfect, and I ended up getting an opportunity to work here with this team, following along in the same kind of role with digital marketing and media.
Great. Now, in regards to digital presence, now, as a team gets younger, and presumably the organization is looking to continue to build a younger fan base, what kind of initiatives are the team examining to specifically make games more affordable or attractive for the young families to help build that demographic of fans?
So this is, I think, obviously Janice is here because of the, we're going to talk a lot about digital presence, so she and I are going to kind of co-answer these. And, you know, I think there's two kind of target audiences that we're talking about here. I know that the question refers specifically to families, and we're going to talk a little bit also about kind of I think teens and tweens are a consideration in that set as well, because there is a difference in terms of their how they purchase and how they consume information, right? Like a family with two young kids is going to obviously be looking for a different experience in the games than the teenagers, for sure, who do have a little more autonomy, who could take the bus here, who could self-organize. So I'll talk a little bit about both of those. From a family perspective, we identified early on in my tenure here that we were probably underrepresenting or not thinking enough about the family experience. And so we have done a number of things this year. I think we've still got a number of, you know, a ways to go, but some of the things we introduced this year was a family, like a family pack, where essentially you buy all in your ticket and you get a food voucher. So it's it's an all in cost of, I believe it's $35 or $39. It's under 40 per ticket, so that essentially you could attend the game and eat for under $100 for a 4-person family, or just around $100, and then, you know, you could put a $12 parking on top of that. And it does become, you know, when you look at a comparative, which would be potentially taking a family of four to the movies, it's fairly comparative. So so that was one of the key pieces. The other thing that we're starting to do is we're starting to look at, you know, in terms of what types of activities are we activating, especially on that second level concourse, because that we do know that families do tend to congregate more in the 300 level. There's a lot of space. You know, we have that concourse up there. There's a lot of space for kids to run around. So we're looking at, do we kind of introduce more activations that would even continue throughout the gameplay? So, you know, I'll use this as a fairly bad example, but it's kind of the type of thing we're looking at. But like, do you have a bouncy castle, or do you have like a shoot the puck for kids, or, you know, when we did country night, we did like a cornhole. So do you do those types of activations so that kids don't have to sit in their seat if they don't want to? We also introduced snack packs this year. So for the first hour after the gates open, you're going to have to correct me, but I think there are about 5 different snack pack varieties that you can get for, I think it's $5. And it's, you know, a small, I think it's a hot dog and a beverage, or it's a fairly small meal, but would be very kid friendly. And we're looking at introducing some new, more healthy options in that. We've got some good partners in the dairy industry. So we're looking to do kind of like, could you do an apples and milk combination? Could you do something that's just a little bit more healthy? Because we do know that parents are looking for not just kind of the hot dogs and popcorn and what have you. So those are some of the things that we're doing in terms of, and in terms of reaching out to them, we've kind of adjusted the way that we are doing our digital approach. So looking at ads and experiences that families are going to be more interested in. So when we put an ad out there, it speaks to the family experience about, you know, coming and spending time together. I've talked a lot about the kind of the mechanics of a family experience, but the piece that I've left out to date is really the emotional aspect of coming to the game as a family. You know, it's hard, I think, in today's day and age to find an experience where a family can come and the kids aren't on a screen or don't want to be on a screen. And, you know, that family time shouldn't be underestimated. We know Ottawa is a very family-oriented market. You know, everyone always says, well, Ottawa, it's a great place to raise a family. So, I mean, we've got to leverage that. So, you know, reminding just the experience of kind of spending that quality time together where the parents can enjoy the experience and the kids can enjoy the experience and come together, I think that's really important, and we're starting to leverage that more in our messaging. When it comes to teens and tweens, we're looking at a few interesting things we're going to try over the holidays. Where we are going to try and leverage some Snapchat activations, which we've never done, I don't think, in the past, from our research, and try and kind of introduce a few new social media ways to get them involved, because we know they share, they interact, they, you know, and usually they use Snapchat or VSCO or Instagram to do those things. So we're really looking at kind of raising our game in those areas.
Okay, and just an add-on onto this, which you guys weren't, because I caught a little bit of heat, in regards to the SEND skills, understanding that the schedule isn't great, but in regards to the pricing and the start time of that, can you give us a little bit more details in regards to...
The start time, for sure. So we really struggled this year to find an appropriate start time. You know, obviously we have to look first and foremost at the player schedules. We have to look at... So we've done it in the past on a Sunday, I believe, but this year the Sunday wasn't available to us because of obviously the Christmas holidays, the travel schedule, and then the game schedule. So we have a back-to-back on the 5th and 6th. And then the thought was, okay, so I believe it's on the Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then it became, okay, kids are off, but parents probably aren't any longer. So if we put it during the day, which was our kind of inclination, then we would have a number of parents who wouldn't be available to bring their kids. So, it's in the evening on a Thursday night. And, you know, but it's still the holidays, and I think that it was the appropriate compromise to make. And, you know, it's one of those things where no matter what time you choose, not everyone is always going to be able to attend. So for us, that was the best option. So that's kind of how that decision got made.
Okay. Fair enough. As the first generation of SENS fans, the first pure generation of SENS fans are millennials. They're now in the 25 to 40 prime discretionary spending age demographic. What challenge do you have in marketing to what has been identified as a consumer group that is online and informed and critical thinkers? Where does the challenge fall for them particularly?
Do you want to do that one, or do you want me to...
Can you start it off?
Yeah, I'll give it. So I'll tell you, this actually has nothing to do with the online informed critical thinking part of it, but it is relevant to the demographic. Transportation is actually a huge issue for this demographic for us. So they are ride sharers. You know, I have a 16-year-old stepdaughter who has her own Uber account. She's not an income earner, but for our family, you know, we have felt that in terms of the safety and in terms of, you know, kind of having a track of where she's going and what she's doing, like Uber is a great way to have that history. And we know that she's in a safe environment and she doesn't have to carry cash on her and all of those things. So that is, but, you know, aside from the teen market in the younger demographic, they don't want to own cars. They want to live downtown. They don't want to own cars. And we're a driving destination. You know, for as long as we're in Kanata, you're going to have to drive here. So obviously our public transit communications, we have actually good service from a public transit perspective. I don't think we do a good job of communicating how that works and where you can go to park and ride, or where, you know, all the routes. And that those are discussions that we're having right now, is how do we just kind of get a lot better at explaining how you can access us if you're not driving. And then the other thing is to look at how we can better structure partnerships in the future with some ride-sharing brands to maybe do something that's subsidized, or to maybe do something that is like a flat rate, or what have you. But we really need, in my opinion, like the biggest issue for us is we need to find a way to get a rideshare program that's affordable to our, because it's going to be the key way to kind of, it's the key barrier right now for them to attend. So that really, again, doesn't have anything to do with the digital side of it. I think on the digital side of it, it's one of the reasons why Janice is here and why we have a whole team dedicated to digital marketing. You know, I think we talked a little bit last time about the fact that we've changed our approach. We're taking a more modern approach. And one of the reasons for that is that we do need to start attracting younger fans. And so, you know, the Janice's position was vacant when I got here. And to have, to be able to get a talent like hers, which came from Sick Kids in Toronto, specifically in digital media. I mean, you know, anyone who knows the Sick Kids brand knows that they do amazing things online and offline. But so to have her come and kind of apply those for me was, you know, that was the win for me. So I don't know if maybe you want to talk a little bit more about kind of the approach.
I guess the other thing I would say is, particularly to the point about the critical thinking, is one of the things that's so great about digital media is that it's not just a pipeline for us to just put stuff out there, but it's an opportunity to have more exchange. And so that's sort of the area that I'm trying to focus on, is hitting some of the platforms that weren't doing as much in before, and also trying to do more to engage. And that takes time, and you have to build on that. So it can't just be ask a question and hope you're going to get some great thoughts and answers. And we also have to set ourselves up so that we can actually respond to it, so it's not just an echo chamber. We are really and truly looking for that kind of feedback and those thoughts and those ideas about how we can make a better experience. I think the other example is working with the digital influencers, because they do have a different network that we're not necessarily reaching directly. And so by collaborating with people such as yourselves and other groups in the community, and we do hope to expand to different influencers that are different markets or different networks that they're working with, that we can hope to have a better exchange with those people and understand a little bit more what they're looking for and how we can serve that population better.
I have a unique question that was submitted. The New York Islanders and the New York Rangers have sponsored puppies for their Puppy with a Purpose and Blue Path programs, respectively. Can we have a Sens puppy or another charitable mascot with an online story to follow?
Yes, we can have a Sens puppy. So that's the short answer. The longer answer is for just a tiny little bit about my background. So I'm an animal enthusiast. I used to volunteer previous to my stint in the Caribbean. I volunteered with the Rideau Valley Wildlife Sanctuary here in the city, and then with the Humane Society. And then when I did a little bit of, I did some time in the Caribbean. It sounds like I served time. When I lived in the Caribbean, I became highly involved with a few charitable organizations there, which led me to actually opening my own veterinary clinic. The island didn't have a veterinarian on staff. So I built a veterinary clinic and hired a veterinarian, and I'm very proud of that work. And as part of that, we also run a not-for-profit that allows for free spay-neuter for island residents that really can't afford it, because population control is such an issue. So that's my background, which kind of leads you to why we saw the introduction of the Furry Fan program this year. Mm-hmm. So it was one of my, you know, I think some people have looked at it and go, like, what do dogs have to do with hockey? And the reality is it's maybe not our most strategic initiative, but I do think that, you know, as playing a role in the community, that the community role that we play, it's important that we kind of look at all aspects of our community, and we know that animals are near and dear to our community's heart, and we felt like we could give a number of local charities or local rescues a platform for their dogs to get adopted. So we've already had two Furry Fan Nights. We've had some adoptions from those Furry Fan Nights. We've had some players adopt from those Furry Fan Nights.
Wow.
Yeah, both Bodker and Stone have adopted out of those Furry Fan Nights. And so, I mean, obviously for me, it's just a passion program. So it would be very shocking to me if I were to say, no, we could not get a Sens mm-hmm. puppy. But stay tuned in very short order for more information on that.
Great. Now, what digital content are you guys looking to update and change? Something that I guess the submitters asked about was, we'd like more stories in regards to the background to learn more about the players and proper bio pages for the executives and management.
So I just want to give a shout out to Craig Medaglia, who is our social media guy. That's not his title, but I'm calling him social media dude. He has done such an awesome job this year of updating the content and really running with a very kind of new vision for our social and our creative. And, you know, he's introduced things like the Road Trip in series, which has been super well received. And, you know, he's also the guy responsible for every day after the game. He makes sure that the highlights that the score is on there. Like, the guy has I'm just super impressed with him. So I did want to give him a shout out because I think you are seeing an evolution of our content, which is ongoing. You know, to say we want to stop everything today and change everything overnight would not make sense. But yes, we are evolving, and I think we're starting to see people recognize that we're evolving in terms of our digital content. But one of the key tenets of my role here is to create connections. And I think, you know, whoever submitted this question is really getting at the heart of it, which is, people want to know more. They want to be more connected to a player. That's why they come to a game, right? They want to watch that player score goals. They want to watch that player block pucks. And they want to know a little bit about who they are as people. So I'll let Janice talk a little bit about some of the things that we have coming out that would help us to do that.
Yeah, so our team, the whole content team, does a really great job of the coverage of the hockey and what's happening and the really fun highlights that they're pulling out and that kind of thing. But they also have a great connection with the players themselves. And because we have such a young team and a lot of new players, we really do want to get people to know them a bit more and connect with them in ways that maybe they haven't before. It's a bit of a change for the Senators, as far as I understand, getting a little bit more access to the players and who they are in the background. And so we're really excited to sort of take it and run with it. So we are doing more things like just getting to the heart of who they are, more about their personalities. One of the things that you'll see coming out today, we're dropping the first episode of our new documentary short called All Roads Lead Home, and that is purely designed to get beyond the hockey, to get to know the players, what it's like to be in the NHL, the struggles that they're facing, the family connections. So through the rest of the season, you'll see 10 different episodes coming out touching on those kind of different things and the people that are involved. We're hoping that could expand further to a long-term thing, but right now we're working on this 10-episode series. We're really excited about it, so keep your eyes out for that.
It's good timing because this podcast is on the same day as the release.
Same day.
As long as you get it out on time, Canuck.
No challenge accepted.
And I think we're trying to introduce, so I said before, sort of hitting some of the different platforms. So again, it's about connecting with different people and different realms. We know that a lot of our players are on Twitter, but more of them are more active on Instagram. So if we can help them to amplify and to build their brand as well, it's only beneficial to them as young players. They don't have that same breadth of knowledge of who's out there, and it's a way for them to connect with the community so people can see that they're really invested in the city and what they're doing in the city and kind of find some simpatico with that. And we are going to be trying to be a bit more active on different places. And then we're also doing different things. So we did something called Sens Army recently. It was a first post that we posted in, I think, on Instagram and on LinkedIn. And what we're going to be trying to do is focus on the different people that make up the Sens. And so that could be like someone that's worked here for a really long time, someone that just does something extra special every time when they come into work. But it could also be people that just have cool jobs within the Sens, long-term season seat members, fans, different people that just make the Senators what they are. And so that was another way that we want to connect with different people and build that sort of broad base of support.
Right on. Now, you sort of answered my next question a little bit earlier, but I'd like you to expand on it a little bit. What I would like to know is, what exactly are the Sens as an organization trying to accomplish with the digital influencers that you were speaking of?
Sure.
So that is a program that came about like within the first couple weeks of my being here. I was not immune to the chatter on social media about our team, and as you guys know, it's very important for me to push the idea of transparency and dialogue. And I just felt like we were treating the people who had audiences online and who cared about our team, were passionate about our team, we were treating them with a very arm's length approach, and we had a much more kind of insider approach, which is understandable, and anyone who's worked in media will know this, but our traditional media kind of had a much more structured and structured program. And my feeling was that it was just smart, modern approach to communication to not treat those two so differently. You know, again, the idea of modernization, the idea of reaching out to millennials, younger people, getting a new fan base, like to suggest that there you guys don't have a platform and that you don't influence the way that people see us and talk about us is a hugely missed opportunity that I think, you know, obviously was just an easy, it was an easy win. And I say win, and I don't want your listeners to think that, again, you're getting all this lavish treatment in the win. But for us, the win was just about creating a dialogue. It was being able to have a relationship with the people that do have these audiences and to be able to say, hey, look, like, you have access now. So if you have a question or you're going to write a story, you know, like the traditional media would, check your sources, call, find out if the organization has a comment, find out some background. Like, you know, again, we're not, I feel like we're really not trying to hide anything, and we're trying to be more transparent. And if we get asked questions, we're going to answer in the best way that we can. But not having a complete chasm between us and those who publish content digitally, I mean, that's just, that's a antiquated approach, in my opinion. So what we're trying to, all we're trying to accomplish, and I've held this from the very, very outset, is all we're trying to accomplish is to have a dialogue. I don't need you to write unicorns and roses about the Ottawa Senators. I do want you to write balanced, objective pieces that, where you've at least looked at both sides and had the ability to have a conversation with those of us who kind of are dealing with the inside, kind of the decision making on some of the things that we're doing. And again, you know, we've had, you guys have a lot of access to people like me and Janice. You have much less access to the hockey operations. That is probably not going to change a whole lot, but I think it's fairly commensurate with some of the other media that don't deal specifically with sports topics, right? So obviously TSN has a lot more access than those types of things. But if it goes well and we're seeing that it's helping everybody kind of gain a better understanding of what's going on with our team, then we'll progress it and we'll give more access and we'll see other ways that we can get involved. But we had to start somewhere, and I didn't have any kind of prescriptive way that it was going to go or how it's going to turn out, but I said this in the last time we spoke, and I'll say it again, like, we've got to try new things. And this was a new thing that for me was such an easy way to start just getting better relationships with those who care about our team.
Yeah, I think it's important to give the experience. So rather than having digital influencers not at the games and just, you know, sort of making their thoughts from afar, at least if you have the direct game day experience, that's something that you can speak to, just like the player or the traditional media would have. I also think it's important, as I said before, social media and digital media is not just a broadcasting tool. It's an opportunity to engage more. And what I've said to you guys, I think right at the beginning, was the worst thing would be is if people weren't talking about us. But there are people talking about us, so we want to be part of that conversation. And so bringing more and more people into the table and giving you access so that you can have more dialogue with us, I think is just a win-win for everyone.
Changing gears a little bit, you're in the marketing department. How hard is it to market the team when you aren't sure which players are still going to be here in the long term? And how does that uncertainty affect the way you market? And kind of going along that lines, like, what happens in your department when a franchise player, for example, like Carlson, leaves? How do you decide who the next player is, and how do you choose who's going to be in the marketing materials?
Welcome to hockey.
Yeah, that's a good answer, because I was just going to say, like, literally you could ask any hockey marketing department the same question. Like, we're not unique in that, and, you know, players get traded, changes get made, so...
Players get hurt.
Yeah, players get hurt. Yeah, like J.G. Pageau came in. Now, he's still a huge part of our team, but he hasn't played a game yet this season. So that's something we had to adjust to really quickly in terms of any kind of content plans or marketing plans that we might have had. You know, how hard is it? You know, plan for it. You plan for it as best as you can. And you know, we have some smart ways to make sure that if we were to trade a player, we can, you know, we spend a lot in printing because sometimes we need to take some players, you know, we need to change out signage, and that those are just, but again, that's normal for any hockey team. And then in terms of like how we decide who the next player is, we don't. The players themselves, like, it's pretty clear who you're, I mean, it's performance-based, right? And it's a bit of fan engagement-based. And this year, we're trying to really balance those players that are well-known, like a Stone and Duchesne and Dzingel and a Pageau, with players that are a little less known. So like a Tkachuk and a Lajoie and a Shabbat's kind of in the middle there. I'd say he's pretty well-known at this point. And Batherson. So we are really trying to kind of not just put all of our all of the eyeballs on the guys that, you know, are the obvious stars on the team, but to try and just broaden the profile of everyone on the team who is obviously contributing in a way that's exciting to watch, right? Because if you're going to hear their name in a radio spot, or you're going to hear, or you're going to see an image of them, and then you want to make sure that that person is someone you're probably going to see on the ice when you go to a game. So, so we just kind of adjust as we see the players themselves kind of rising or falling or connecting in special ways with fans. And it's, I mean, you have 25 guys to choose from, so.
And sometimes they do it themselves too. Like, so it's, sometimes it's about the off ice things that they're doing as well. So, for example, the Ryan Dzingel thing with Jacob, the cancer patient, and his sister, that was something that kind of just happened because he's a great guy and he reached out and was accessible. And so we
met in a keg parking lot. Like, we didn't organize that.
Yeah. So, but we're going to go with that, and we're going to celebrate it and help to amplify those great things that are happening as well.
Okay, great. We'll move on to the next section in regards to communication. This will be a fun one. Communication with the fans is important in connecting with the fans, obviously. Great sentence. That said, the 2018-19 season was opened with the fireside chat between Eugene Melnyk and Mark Borowiecki. What are your thoughts on that video?
So I was involved in that video. I'm happy to not only involved, but I was part of the team that came up with the idea. I was actively involved. So if anyone wants to kind of blame whoever they want to blame, you can blame me. My thoughts on that video were the purpose was to communicate to our fan base that we were going to rebuild. And I don't think there's anyone that walks away from that video and had any question about what was happening. Was it the most comfortable? Was it the, you know, it was a message that had to be delivered from our owner so that everyone understood that he was buying into this, that he was really driving this rebuild, you know. And Mark is a great character player. He was keen to do it and did it achieve the communications objectives? Absolutely. I 100%, everyone that saw that video knows we were rebuilding. Did everybody love it? No. But again, not everyone's going to love everything.
Who picked out the wardrobes for the video? You don't have to answer that.
I'm not going to.
Are you sure it's not like his lucky jersey or something like that?
Oh, no.
Easy.
Okay.
Easy.
Well, that's right.
Okay. Moving on.
It's a lot of moving parts, obviously, and that was something that got overlooked, and we're sorry.
There were plans to hold further town halls throughout the season, but there hasn't been anything further on this project so far, at least, and there was significant public interest at the time. What's your strategy with holding these events, and how would you be looking to involving existing season ticket holders, occasional purchasers, and non-paying fans, with specifically, possibly, in the non-paying fans, the former season seat holders?
Yeah. I think this is a really great question, actually. I'm really happy, because I think the town halls is a construct from before my time, but I feel responsible in a way that we haven't continued to honor that promise. That's for sure a problem. I can say on the flip side, there are a number of other ways that we have been engaging with feedback. So we've held the largely focused, large scoped research program at the beginning of the year. We've since done some focus groups as well with both season seat holders, lapsed season seat holders, and millennials. So we had groups come in. When did we hold those? Those were the middle of November, end of November.
Yep.
And then also we had a group of Francophones. So we had some focus groups, and then we also just did a survey, a smaller survey, with, again, all of those groups. So we are soliciting feedback in other ways. Nick has also, prior to most games, been hosting kind of 10 to 20 people from the business community or from our season seat holders to just kind of have a fireside chat about what's going on in the club and answering any questions they might have, and being really open about kind of doing an ask me anything type thing, just but with face to face. So we are soliciting to suggest that we're not soliciting any feedback is wrong, but we haven't specifically continued the town hall structure. We got some mixed reviews from the town hall structure. Some people felt it was valuable, some people didn't. We've had the suggestion to potentially do more like a webinar that would be almost like a shareholder webinar, where you could call in and you would get some kind of quarterly update or what have you, which I also think is a good idea. It does kind of depersonalize it a little bit, but I think there's an opportunity for us to either continue the town halls or to kind of change their structure. But we are still finding mechanisms to get feedback from our fans, and I think I would hope that most people agree that we've kind of solicited the most amount of feedback that the club has solicited in a long time. So we are out there asking, but the town halls specifically are something that we probably need to either make a formal call that we're not doing them anymore, or find a structure to have them in that's a little bit more productive or efficient.
Got a general and a specific question. The relationship with the media seems to have been a difficult one this year. In your opinion, what role does the media play for the team? And maybe as a specific example, we look at the conflicting situation of the Uber video. It could have been swept under the rug, or the team could have owned the situation, maybe play light with it, where you could build lighthearted content with it. Why was the team so quick to react so harshly and negatively to the media on that?
So the media plays a huge role with the team, obviously, but this is a question that I'm not 100%, it's not part of my purview. So I have 9 departments that report into me, and media and communications isn't one of them. So for me to kind of opine about what's about why we handled a certain situation another way, one way or another, honestly, a lot of times I will hear about the situation not much in advance to the public hearing about the situation. So it's just not part of my purview, and it would really just be me kind of giving you a whole bunch of conjecture as to why we did what we did. So I think, we're looking to build better relationships with media. I think that you're seeing an evening out of our relationship with media after that particular incident. But I would be speculating.
Okay. Now, with that, and so much we can answer on this with this group, but conversely to the speed of the media was punished, there's been no comment in regards to the exposure of the pro-Melnick bot accounts, of which some of these accounts direct people to the newly launched LeBretonFlatsFacts.com site, which states that the copyright is by Capital Sports Management, Inc. Do you confirm or deny that these bot accounts and site are under operation of the Ottawa Senators or its affiliates?
Sure. So let me deal with the issue of LeBretonFlatsFacts.com. That is a website that is copyrighted by Capital Sports Management, Inc. It is one of our websites. We've made no attempts to hide that. So that's not something we're trying to hide. So the bots, I think, are a separate piece. Yes, some of them, I think, are linking there, but the bots are a separate piece. When it comes to the bots, there is no question, and any one of your listeners, because I know they follow you on Twitter, they know that Twitter bots are an issue. This is not an Ottawa Senators issue. I think there's something like 72 million Twitter bots, I'm misquoting this, and so everybody don't get freaked out, but I can tell you that there was recently a study done by a team at Duo Security, and in one day they found over 7,000 amplification bots in one day. 7,000. And I'm sure none of them had to do with the Ottawa Senators, or maybe they did. But if you look at both sides of the coin, there are as many Twitter bots pro-Melnick as there are anti-Melnick. And I think to suggest that there's some conspiracy, I can deny. We are not behind the Twitter bot. We are not controlling the Twitter universe and putting a whole bunch of Twitter bots out there. So I know no matter what I say, there's people out there that are going to say, well, of course she's denying it because it's just not us. It's a problem on Twitter. It's pro and against. There's, you know, I think, let's move on.
There's no win on that one, no matter which way it goes, for sure.
I don't want to not address it, though, because I know it's one of those questions where they would, you know, where it's one of those questions where if we don't address it, then it looks like we're hiding. But then also if we do address it, it's, you know, it feels like we're not, I don't know. Oh, yeah. There's no win.
The team has done press releases for a variety of things, and one of which was the announcements of team refinancing. Why were these public announced when no other team feels the need to do that? And in addition, in discussion of press releases, why is it necessary to bring up things like statement from Eugene Melnyk or Nick Rutkowski in the passing, in regard to the passing of Ray Emery, or the error on the signing of the anthem singing of the national anthem? Thank you. Instead of representing the organization as a whole.
Cardinals defense, it does say signing.
These are things that are submitted by our listeners.
That's all pan. So I got to kind of answer this in the same way. I wasn't involved in the announcement on team refinancing. I'm not, you know, this again isn't my purview. So for me to comment would just be conjecture.
Fair enough.
So next section in regards to customer service retention, growth, acquisition, and reacquisition. So this season, the Senators have done significant ticket giveaways and deep discounts for tickets. What motivation is there to pay full price for tickets, and how do you convert these giveaways into long-term revenue streams?
I am so happy to be able to answer this question. We have done giveaways. We've done them in kind of three strategic areas. One is our season seat members. So it's really important to understand that the organization cares about our season seat members. It cares about the loyalty that they've shown us, particularly in this year when it's been hard to do so. And we want them to have priority access to any kind of attendance or ticket or special offer that we are doing. So they are number one on our list. They get it before anybody else. And oftentimes they are the only ones to get it. Where we go outside of our season seat members is in two occasions. One is for charities. So the foundation has a connection with an organization that specifically directs tickets to children and or charity organizations where they may not otherwise be able to participate in our experience. The second area where that wouldn't ring true is in areas of special recognition. So I'm going to give you a really concrete example. At the beginning of this year, we had a tornado, and we made the conscious decision after that to recognize certain groups in our community that had helped to contribute. So for instance, we did a number of first responders evenings. We offered free tickets to police, paramedic, fire, for them and their families to come out and enjoy the game. We also recognized people at Ottawa Hydro, and we also recognized
we also honored, because the tornado happened on a game night, we also honored all of the people that made it out to the game, because it was great that they came out regardless of the weather, and also those people that couldn't for obvious reasons, we made sure that they were all honored with another additional opportunity to go to a game.
So I think the rest of the question, frankly, is a little bit moot, because it's not like we are just spraying free tickets out into the market. We're being very deliberate about where they go, how they serve the community, and to recognize our loyalty of our members. And then if, because I'm sure there'll be a listener that'll say, I'm not a part of any of those and I got a free ticket. I hope that some of those tickets are getting into people's hands who are lapsed fans or lapsed kind of believers, because what I really hope, you know, when the part of the question says how do you convert these giveaways into long-term revenue streams, I hope that they come and they see a different experience. I hope that they come and they see a different team, and I hope that they leave thinking, wow, you know, the Ottawa Senators have changed, and I'm now more interested to have a conversation, I'm more interested to consider that this is going in a direction that I'm interested in being a part of. And I, you know, if they, I guarantee that if they come, there have been very, very few experiences this year where I feel like our game, our whole package, the on ice and the in-game experience and everything we offer hasn't necessarily been a very different experience. I can count them, you know, I think there's two that I can count. So I do hope that people are coming and giving us another chance.
Okay. So, and going back to what you said, too, that you're getting the free tickets through the season's ticket holders.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking as a previous season's ticket holder, what entices me that already has a seat to the game to receive more seats to the game?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll give you an anecdotal answer of a friend of ours who buys season tickets every year. He buys them in 300 level. It's definitely something that is, I'll use the words a hard-fought privilege, but it's something that they make a priority. It's not a throwaway for them. It's very important. But he has two tickets, but three kids. So, you know, for him, the feedback I've gotten from him is, this is fantastic because I can afford to bring my whole family to a game as opposed to having to parse out just who's going to get that extra ticket on a game night. So I know we have a lot of fans who are now opting to have a more inclusive family experience because of some of the opportunities that they're getting with tickets. And then, you know, I would say maybe in another circumstance, and again, this is feedback that we've received, you know, it's for employee recognition. A lot of our season seat holders are companies, and they're using these tickets to recognize employees. And if you can recognize four employees instead of two employees, then, you know, that's a win. So to, you know, I think to look at it as like I own a seat and it's my butt in that seat all the time is a fairly narrow way to look at it. And the reality is, if you don't want an extra seat, you're not forced to take the ticket. It's obviously given for people who might see value in it, who might want to use it.
I think it's about community building too, because sometimes there's people that, like, this is their tradition. They do it every year. They go to all the games and they know all the people around them. And this is a chance for them to bring other friends that they think would enjoy that and to sort of build potentially an opportunity for future season seat members.
Cool. Now, there's a flip side to this, and that's for existing season ticket holders, and how, due to these giveaways and discounts that you're doing, the existing season ticket holders no longer pay the lowest price per ticket, allegedly, and the member perks have been dramatically reduced year over year. So one submission that we received says she felt betrayed and stupid for renewing her tickets. Like no promise fan for life meet and greet is yet to occur. The only one was Saunders Farm one. What motivation should these customers have to renew moving forward, and what are you planning to do to recompense them the season to have them satisfied?
We are currently, so for those of you who obviously follow the team and who would be season seat holders, you would know that we launch a renewal campaign at the beginning of every year, the date to be determined. We're trying to get out earlier this year than we have in past years. We're trying to be more organized. We are currently working on a revamp of the structure, and that includes kind of a revision of pricing. You know, we set pricing last year at a time when we weren't, you know, and this happens every year. You set pricing at the beginning of the year, especially for your season seat members, and then you walk into a season like the one that we've had where an empty building is a terrible experience. And so we want to help people get in the building in a more kind of voluminous way. I would say flat out, the idea that season ticket holders no longer pay the lowest price per ticket is not true. On an aggregated, the full year, they definitely do pay the lowest ticket. There are games that we do know that we have gone below, but to suggest that that's a habit that's just every game is not true. But we do know that we need a bit of a revision on our pricing. We need a revision on our benefits program. We know that benefits have been kind of decreasing, or at least the value of those benefits have a perceived decreased value. We are working on that. I think you're going to see a dramatically changed program, and especially not just to entice people to come back, but also to reward the loyalty again of those who have stuck with us through a year that was hard. So we are making changes. Those changes you will see in the new year. And I think that, you know, when it comes to what motivations do these customers have to renew moving forward, you know, I was thinking of this question, and the analogy that I would come to is that we are, you know, I'm reading a book right now that talks a little bit. I'm not going to say the title on air because it has a swear word in it. But it talks really, the premise of it is like, there is no light without the dark. There is no win without a loss. There is no kind of glory without defeat. And I really do think that that is kind of, you know, to be part of this rebuild is an incredible experience. And there is no comparison, you know, to being in this crowd and to watching these young players do extraordinary things some nights, and some nights really get crap beat out of them. But, you know, it's an up and down. Again, there's no glory without defeat. And I would hope that our fans, you know, that are going to stay with us, are going to, when we rise, and we will rise, the value of having been there through that difficult time, it will be so much sweeter. You know, that being said, we play a role in that, and we know we have to offer value. We know we have to make sure that we take care of our season seat members, and we will do that. We will do that.
To that point, there has been a significant drop in renewals coming into this season, and to those of who we've spoken to, and two of us in this group fall into that group, no attempt has been made to win back people, the business of the people who are no longer season seat holders. There's been very little or to little no communication. So what strategies do you have to win back these previous customers?
So this is the one where I'll call bullshit. To suggest that there has been no attempt made to win back our lapsed season seat members business. We have an incredibly dedicated sales team. We have logs of all the calls that they've made to people. I've heard on a number of occasions, they never called me, and yet I can go and see the call log and see that there are three or four calls that have been made and a logged exchange with those people. You know, are there one or two or five or ten that may have fallen through the cracks? Of course, I'm not going to sit here and say that that's not possible. I don't think it's probable, but it's possible. And so the strategies to win back, I think, are a lot of what I just talked to. I think one is, you know, transparency and communication and talking and getting feedback and giving people an opportunity to say what they did, why they're pissed, what they want to see differently. You know, and again, we may not be able to do all the things that everybody wants, but we're sure going to listen, and we're sure going to make sure that we, you know, we have a program that is reflective of what people are telling us. We need to, so I think that is the single best thing that we can do this year is to say, we want to hear more. We're going to implement changes based on what you're telling us. We're going to do things differently. Like, I think people really wanted, I hope that people really wanted to know that things are different in the organization. They also want to know that the on-ice product is different. I mean, for as much marketing as I do, I mean, I'm not naive. I don't sit here and say, you know, marketing is the savior of all things Ottawa Senators. That is obviously not true. So our on-ice product has been so exciting to watch. I have not heard one person, and maybe it's because I work for the organization and they don't want to tell me the truth, but no one is saying this is shit hockey. No one. They're all saying, you know what, sometimes they're not winning, but I'm not even that upset about the fact that maybe if they don't win a game, because they're really, really trying, and I'm seeing some great things come out of the hockey. So I think you're seeing the hockey operations side really start to, you know, they're delivering on their piece. The marketing piece, I know that the jury is probably still out for people in terms of, will they actually change? Will they actually deliver? But I think when those two things come together, that's the strategy that we have to win back these customers.
And I think it's a little bit about putting a bit more behind some of that. So one of the areas that we really want to focus more on is on content. So that's programs, services, products. And so the more that we can do to just reorient the season seat member program and let people know some of the new value add that we're going to try to bring to the table and educate, remind people what the benefits are of being a season seat member and some of the things that maybe they hadn't thought of that we can help them use it for different reasons or use it better. And so that's another area of focus that we're going to be working on as well.
Okay. Because with that, and I know like my tickets are in the 300s, so I might not be priority because I know I haven't received.
Everybody's priority, Pan.
Okay.
Pan, you're sitting in front of us. We're obviously communicating with
you.
Yeah,
but on a different level, though. Not as a consumer, but...
Yeah, I understand. But at the same time, like, it, you know, we are... you have a relationship with our organization now. So yes, am I going to hard sell you on renew your tickets? Probably not. But I mean, I think my objective would be to say, Pan, have you noticed a difference this year? Like, are things changing? Mm-hmm. Is it enough to... Like, I'm never going to hard sell you and be like, Pan, why haven't you renewed your season tickets this year? But I do hope that, you know, its actions are speaking louder than words. Are you guys seeing a difference? And does it make a difference in your decision making?
Okay. Fair. Considering that throughout the community, Eugene Melnick has a negative reputation and that a lot of anger is directed towards him, is there too much damage done and is resolution impossible to achieve? How do you plan to overcome these challenges that are created by issues that are above you?
I can't comment on whether, like, the answer to that question is between the fans and Mr. Melnick. So for me to say, sure, it's repairable or it's not repairable, I don't know. But what I can tell you is we can just keep doing what we're doing. We can keep putting a great product on the ice. We can keep putting a great fan experience out there. And we can keep reminding people of the important role that the Ottawa Senators brand plays. You know, we're a hockey team, but we're also a business. We're a nonprofit organization. We're a community center. We are a driver of economics in our city in many ways, you know, and at a very micro level. Like, we had a restaurant, a bar owner say, like, I can't attend your games because my bar is so friggin' busy on your game nights. Like, to suggest that we have no economic impact is not true. We have a huge economic impact on the city, and I hope that, you know, we can keep reminding people and showing people of those types of proof points, and that those are the pieces that I feel will hopefully drive kind of a re-engagement with our club.
Now, on a personal note, I've seen significant changes on in-game experiences, but this question's a little bit more with on ice. Considering the stigma and precedence that money isn't being used to retain top talent or being invested into making the product on ice more competitive and successful, why should fans trust the process and continue to be emotionally and financially engaged or even remotely care anymore? For example, for those who say it's too late, they'll never come back under current ownership, what statement would you have for them?
So I would argue that our on-ice product is more competitive and is more successful this year. I mean, if we look at the standings, the reality is I don't want to predict the future, but I do not believe we will end the year a second to last. So that's a piece that is important to talk about. And what I can also talk about is my personal experience with spending money in this organization. I mean, obviously, I'm the CMO. I have a budget. I have never been told by our senior management, so that would include Nicholas Truskowski or Mr. Melnick, to not spend. Again, I don't know what happens on the ice side. I don't manage hockey operations. But in fact, I've had the opposite experience. I had a meeting with Mr. Melnick yesterday where he was, you know, encouraging me. We had a great country night on Monday night where we really kind of had a very rich, deep experience. And he came to me and he said, do whatever you have to do to make that experience an ongoing thing. I mean, he knows that those are investments that need to be made. We had some corporate partners, but by and large, we paid for the activation. So my personal experience is not that money isn't being invested. I hope that, just like I said in the previous one, I hope that fans will re-engage because they recognize all of the other things and all of the other reasons to be a part of our club. If they're not, you know, there is literally nothing I could say to somebody, I don't think, if they've just decided our owner is the reason they're not coming back. That's not a piece of the puzzle I have any control over. I hope that they will see past that. I hope that they will buy into the bigger vision. I hope that they will understand that being part of this is something very special. I feel it's something very special. But if it comes down to, I just don't like them, okay.
And you can see the motivation across the board. So I'm relatively new to the team. I walked in the doors and I didn't know what I was going to see, but right from the people working here in this level, in this office, people are pumped and they're excited, and they talk about how they haven't been this excited in a long time. And then you look on the ice. Those players are not dejected. They're engaged. They're striving to win. They're having great relationships, fun on and off the ice. You see on their own Instagram accounts and in the things that they're doing. It's an exciting time to be here. So
yeah, there are 25 guys that go out every night. They're maybe new to Ottawa. They're going out there and they're leaving it out on the ice. And I feel a little bit like people are punishing them, punishing us, and not really seeing the bigger picture here. You know, those guys deserve your support. They deserve your support. They're fighting for your city every night. And we'd sure love to show you a great time when you're here and have you leave with a great memory.
Fair enough. Amy, Janice, thank you both so much for being open to joining us for this Ask Me Anything session. Well, actually the second one, because we already did one. And also thanks to our listeners for submitting the questions that made this possible. They certainly had some difficult questions for you, and thank you for stepping up and answering them. I mean, some of them were out of your purview, but you guys certainly didn't shy away from those. For listeners, if you have any other recommendations on who you'd like to hear from or things you'd like us to do, you can email us at podcast@sendscallups.com. You can reach us on Twitter and @sendscallups. And you can also send them to us via our voicemail at 1-844-SCU-SENDS.
I just wanted to say one more thing just on the follow-up to our last one. I did receive an email from a listener who had an amazing contact for us to reach out to and an amazing opportunity. So I just wanted to say thank you to that listener. That was great. And I wanted you to know that we are looking at it and we're going to follow up there. But there was only one. I would love more. You know, again, we're having this dialogue to get more input and to get kind of a more collaborative process going. And if you're listening and you have suggestions for us, please reach out and either put them in the comments or, you know, I put my email in the last one. I'll repeat it. It's DEZIELA@OttawaSenators.com. Because I know that you had a fairly high uptick in that previous podcast. And I was hoping that we would just kind of get a little bit more, people obviously have a lot of opinions about what we're doing, so let's work on them together.
Fair enough. Excellent. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.